Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show with best-selling author Lori Beth Jones. We are eager, Lori Beth, to talk with you today about the principles of an Omega leader. So welcome to the show, Lori Beth.
Well, it's great to be with you, Shelley. Today it is you and me, and I think you're one of the best guests ever because you always keep things moving along and you have very penetrating questions. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Wow. Boy, that puts me under pressure right now, right at the gate. But we're excited to jump in today to talk about these principles of an Omega leader. And over the last several months, actually over a year now, we've been talking about the Omega leadership style, this coin that you are, this title that you coined, Lori Beth, to define leadership, blending the alpha and the beta style of management into this cooperative leader, using Jesus as a role model as your example, as you have so beautifully written for us in these books and pages and chapters that that we're sharing with each other and with the community and with the listeners. So thank you so much for your work around these topics, and particularly this one, the launch section of Jesus Entrepreneur, as we look at the launch as kind of a spiritual formation of how leaders, they just kind of jump right in, right? The launch is about jumping in and making things
right.
Happen and making them move. And so today we are going to focus on two areas that you have drawn our attention to around this Omega leadership style of Jesus. One, he didn't work for money, and two, he was an insider. Talk to us a little bit about this first area. He didn't work for money. Wow, that is definitely an upside-down kingdom thinking in our world today. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. Before we begin, though, or launch into this, I'd just like to dedicate this show to my new friend, Kelsey Jones. I've never met her, but she is undergoing, she's a wonderfully bright, young 17-year-old that's undergoing some cancer challenges, and she has surgery tomorrow, and she's endured 40 surgeries, and she was 11 years old. So, Kelsey, this show is for you and for her beloved grandfather, Brent, who first made me aware of Kelsey's love for my work and my words. And when she gets through this, we're going to write a book together. So, Kelsey, this
wow.
is for you, and I pray a quick recovery for you. All right. So, Jesus didn't work for money. You know, some people fast from the news, and I probably should because I see too much of it. You know, mostly we report bad news, and certainly it, there's a lot of that. But one of the things that strikes me is the people who are enduring sacrifice and challenge, and money really isn't what's driving them. Certainly the protesters that we saw in Egypt and the Jasmine Revolution that has taken place in the Middle East, named for the state flower of Tunisia, I believe, or maybe it's Egypt, I don't know. It seems like there's just a wave crossing the Middle East. And these are people who are protesting their poor working conditions or lack of economic opportunity. And then I saw in the news today that a group of clergy had gathered outside of Wall Street to cast out demons from Wall Street. I think, you know, that's probably not too bad of an idea, since none of the people who perpetuated what's really become a widespread fraud have been sent to prison. But all of that to say, kind of that cloud of, you know, it ain't about the money. It's really how are we living our life? What choices are we making every day? Can we look in the mirror at any time during the day and say, you know, this, I'm doing what I came here to do. And this whole chapter is really dear to my heart, because so much of our work, Shelley, as you know, flows from this concept of the spiritpreneur,
right,
which is someone who can answer yes to these three questions. I am doing work that honors God. I am doing work that honors me, my gifts, and my talents, and a living doing all of the above. So when you get that blend of work that is meaningful to you, enough to sustain you, then you can be in that constant state of flow that we all desire to be in.
Yeah, and you talk about, again, in this particular section of the book, that word spiritpreneur, and you point out that spiritpreneurs do not work for money. Instead, we channel tremendous amounts of energy into areas that interest us and find, surprisingly, that money is a byproduct of our loving and intense focus. And, wow, what a huge impacting few sentences that is, Lori Beth, as you talk about this word spiritpreneur is very, very akin to an Omega leader. Would you say yes to that?
Well, yes. I mean, Omega leaders are definitely spiritpreneurs. They're working, they're using their gifts, making a living, and honoring God through what they do. And this is just a pinpoint, you know, this is the sweet spot that I believe all of society is yearning for. And we try to act it out in different ways. And some of us are better at it than others, and some of us really go about it the wrong way. But to be able to love what you do and make money at it, and enough to sustain you. So my mind is going in three different tracks right now. One is I've hired a personal trainer named Heidi Fearon, F-E-A-R-O-N, who is an amazing example to me of a spiritpreneur. She's a West Point graduate, and she comes from a family where success, all of her siblings are mega successful in business. One's a doctor, one's an entrepreneur, and she could have gone that route, but decided instead to study acupuncture, and she's an endurance athlete, and she does many of these things, none of which really pay as much as any of her other siblings are making, and certainly her father is a multimillionaire. And yet she does this, and I was with her this morning, we were working out, and I asked her, when do you feel that flow? And she said, you know, when I'm with someone and they just, I can change them to get out of the drama of their life and see new potential. And she said there's just no greater feeling than that. She does acupuncture, and she does, I've got her doing personal training, and she's a former endurance athlete and all these things. And yet she was saying that she just got back from Hawaii, and she was asking herself, you know, is this really the path I'm on, or should I just go, you know, go back to corporate America and do something that makes a lot of money? And so we're doing our stretches in the gym, and I said, well, what would it look like to go back to corporate America? And she said, doing work with people that I, doing things I don't care about with people that I don't really want to be around. Getting rich.
Wow.
So she'd rather work one-on-one with people making a difference. And she, and you know, to find that sweet spot, Shelley, and you know this too, because you do it all the time, it's a constant calibration of keeping your balance, because we're always pulled one way or the other, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Well, you know, as I'm sitting here, pondering this thought of that money becomes a byproduct. It was interesting. A couple of days ago, I had Googled making money in preparation for this this session with you, and 71,600,000 hits on making money. And so, you know, consequently, we do not see money as a byproduct of finding and living our highest good in the world. And I think, Roy Beth, that's one of the things that sets you apart and sets your work apart and your programs and your writings apart is that you're constantly bringing in front of us, kind of in our face with this model of using Jesus as a role model, that that turns the, you know, it just turns us on our head, and it's upside down to what we're thinking, what we're Googling, what we're texting, what we're tweeting. It's just an amazing art, and I believe giftedness that you have to bring that into perspective. But certainly in our society, and I guess a result of, you know, mismanaging money, we have found almost a country on its head as a result of that starvation for money.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this too in preparation for the show, and thinking about my parents, who were quite frugal, and they were both victims of the Depression. Not victims, I mean, they were, my mother was 18 or 20 when the Depression hit, and my father was the exact same age. So, and he went through World War II and came back, and so they were very frugal. You know, it was the American dream. You go get a house, and you make sure your children are educated, and you have the nice home with the picket fence, and that became the dream. So then I think the next generation, my generation, it was like, well, let's ramp it up. We don't need one house, we need two houses. We don't need one car, we need two cars. How far can we take this? And then we took it to the excess of this bubble that just burst on all of us, you know, egg on our face. And now we're in this space where we're really forcing ourselves, being forced to think, what is enough? You know, what is enough? Mm-hmm. And I think that it used to be, it's never enough. No matter what you have, it is never enough. And that driving force that is, you know, the ear, the talking ear, the talking voice in so many of us, we're never young enough, we're never beautiful enough, we're never thin enough, rich enough, smart enough, whatever it is, the enough that you put in front of or behind those descriptor words, you know, we need to decide, Diane, this is enough. If only we had this is enough. So it's a tough question to ask, and I bet not many people could really answer that.
True. Well, certainly we need money in our culture and in our society in order to sustain growth and to sustain the economy and to take care of our families and our needs. But I think that question is very pivotal in the sense of how much do we need and how much square footage do we need to occupy? And, you know, what is our footprint? You know, those kinds of questions, because, you know, I think people could look at my life and say, well, you know, does she make enough money? Does she, you know, charge enough for her services? You know, these programs that the Path Leader puts out is, you know, that's sustaining this organization. You know, those questions could come to the surface, and they're great questions. And I think that's what this process is about, moving into understanding the dynamics and the structure around being an Omega Leader with the kind of focus and intention that Jesus modeled for us. You know, so I guess, you know, part of it is I'm preaching to, you know, to myself as much as anyone else, is, you know, when I Googled the making money, 71 million people or hits, you know, trying to figure out how to do this thing, it's a big deal.
Right. So, in Jesus Career Counselor, my most recent book, that's a real question that I ponder. How do you go about making money? And when you're in a job that you don't like anymore, how do you go about transitioning from that? And when do you decide, to quit making money and just, you know, live off of retirement. So every person at so many different ages, I mean, each of us at different ages have to confront this question. I remember a dear friend of mine, her little nephew Joseph called her one day, and he was 5. And he said, "I've been thinking." He said, "I need a job." She said, "Well," 5 years old, she said, "Joseph, well, you can help, you know, take out the trash and do some chores." He said, "No, I need a real job. It's time for me to start making some money around here." 5 years old.
Wow. Well, one of the things I do want to point out here in this chapter is you give a list of rank the elements of their jobs that give meaning and purpose as follows, the study that you drew from. And there's like 7 things here, so I'm going to read down them real quick. 1 is the ability to realize their full potential. 2, being associated with an organization that is good and ethical. 3, interesting work. 4, making money. 5, having good colleagues serving humankind. 6, service to future generations. 7, service to their immediate communities. And so, you know, making money was not at the top of the list. You know, even when you pen these words, Lori Beth. So there are other reasons, you know, that we do what we do, going to work every day, right?
Exactly.
So making money isn't always at the top. It's the joy and the bliss of knowing that when we align our will and our work with our talent, with our mission, that we're making a difference. So thank you. Thank you for sharing these words with us as we merge into this second focus that you're going to share with us a little bit about. Is he was an insider. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, I was thinking about that in preparation for the show, too, and you know, I have worked with lobbyists. So if you wanted to get government money, let's say, go make some money from the government, would you rather follow a paper trail and you know, tick off the to-do list of how to do this and go to this agency or that agency, or would you rather talk to someone who knew from the inside how it really works?
Sure.
You know, there's a TV show called The Chicago Code, and it's showing kind of the underbelly of the corrupt Chicago society, and the city alderman set up the guy in Chinatown to be mayor, and they have these deals on the side, and, you know, it's all, and it's just about the insiders. And so I was thinking about the negative or the flip side of the insider. An insider is someone who knows how things really work, despite what things might look like they should work or how they should work. And so in the positive way, Jesus was an insider because he really knew what heaven was like. He really knew how heaven worked.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been there. So when he came and told us, you know, this is the way it is in heaven, we notice the baby birds that fall to the ground. We notice the woman giving her last penny in the offering plate. We notice someone bringing a cup of water to someone who's thirsty. This is the way it is. And so this yearning and this messaging that he gave us was from an inside perspective. He wasn't out throwing rocks at a glass house. He wasn't saying, you should do this because this is the way it's supposed to be done. He was saying, look, I can get you there faster. I came to show you a better way. I know the route. I know the way to get there. I remember driving with my mother, and she knew all these shortcuts, and we would just roll our eyes when she'd say, I know a better way. But now she would get us there fast. So, you know, Jesus, it's worth listening to him, even as if he were a lobbyist in the positive sense. If we need something from heaven, Jesus knows how it works. So let's study him and walk with him and talk with him and ask him, how does this work? And then we'll get our answers.
You know, I love how you open this chapter. It says, because Jesus is so renowned, it is easy to forget that at one time he did not stand out at all. He easily blended into the crowd. Even though he came from heaven, God saw fit to make him fit into this world as part of a village, part of a race, part of a region, part of a culture. Jesus of Nazareth, Jewish male, average height and build, son of Mary and Joseph, occupation, carpenter, address, Olive Avenue. Wow. That's amazing. I mean, it's just so unbelievable, you know, just popping out right there on that page that common as Olive Avenue, but when it was time to stand out, when it was time, like you said, to understand from, you know, from where Jesus came, to deliver the message and the picture and the image, wow, what better intel could there have been?
It's just so amazing that God became flesh and dwelt among us.
Mm.
That's really the first great scandal.
Yeah.
The first scandal of the gospel, and then the next scandal is Jesus saying, calling us brothers and sisters, and that he was equal with God and inviting us into that partnership. That was scandalous.
Mm.
And the gospel really still is scandalous. I was walking in dog park, and this woman came by with this little black chihuahua, who was, I guess, part chihuahua, part crested chihuahua. And so he had this, like, Rod Stewart hair flopping over his face. And and his tail was crooked. I don't know if it had been broken or bent or what. Much personality. And I said, that is the cutest dog. And she said, oh, he's scandalous, simply scandalous.
Wow. Well, you
so
certainly,
that way, Jesus was scandalous. Simply scandalous.
Yeah, right. You certainly put a spin on John 1:14 there, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. In a very powerful image or and word picture, scandalous. Why did God do that?
Because
why did we
culture.
Need? Go ahead. Go ahead.
For Trump's strategy, all of his other strategies had not been working. It was
right.
Time. Come
right. On. Yeah, you cut out for a second there. If you're on speakerphone, it's cutting out just a little bit when I talk and then you talk. But repeat that again, just in case.
Well, culture Trump's strategy and all of the outside messages and messengers he'd been sending, the Ten Commandments, the prophets, the kings, the judges, nothing was working. So he just, his only begotten son to be among us and to teach us as one of us.
Hmm. Wow. Is there a negative side to being an insider?
Well, it depends on which side. If you got to be on the right side. I'm watching Harry's Law, that TV show with Kathy Bates, which I just get such a kick out of, and is so well written. And it's about gang members trying to get out of gangs, and she's defending them and trying to, you know, one of the gang members decided to give up a part of his liver to a kid that he'd beaten up to try to keep in the gang. And, you know, it shows the dual morality that goes on in those loyal groups. And it's they're in the wrong side of family, you know.
Mm.
So they're insiders, but in a wrong way. So the inside that we want to be in is to be in the heart of God, in the mind of God, in the mouth of God, if you will, and to have God's mouth in ours, in the sense of speaking those words. And, you know, the priest used to wear the ephod, which was to remind them the breastplate of the word of God, and the 12 tribes of God, the family. Those were the insiders that they saw themselves as being chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And shouldn't we all see that? We're chosen.
Sure. So, sometimes I wonder about the culture inside what we would call the seven pillars of society, the business, education, healthcare, government, faith, organizations, mass media. There's a culture in there. And sometimes when you have tenure in that culture, as an insider, it looks and feels differently than the new person walking through the door. But when I think about how he was an insider, and in these pictures that you've painted for us this afternoon, it makes me realize more and more that the longer that we are in an organization, an occupation, a career, an industry, a pillar, the more we should become like an Omega leader.
Mm.
But I often wonder if it's the reverse. Just a thought. Just a question.
Mm-hmm. We become a little too comfortable with the status quo, a little too sure of ourselves, the way things work and the way they should work, and not quite as open to surprise or innovation. Yeah, that's a very subtle point and a good one.
Yeah. Well, wrap us up here, Lori Beth, and talk to us about salt for a second. You kind of end this insider piece with a salt story.
Well, my little filly, Little Pistol, once again, I constantly tell stories about her, but I watched this one. I guess she's so special to me because I watched her from day one until the time she really was a yearling and was constantly aware of what she was up to. And I turned her out into the pasture on her own one day, and there was a salt lick, and she started grazing, and she couldn't have been a week old, and her nose bumped this salt lick, and she sniffed it, and then she started licking it. And her tail, which was only maybe 6 inches long at a time, started wagging like a dog. Up and down and side to side. And, oh, my goodness, it was like she had discovered this amazing treasure of salt. And it's that specialness. It is that sweet taste of otherness that comes from knowing that we are not of this world. We are a little bit alien here. Our kingdom is not in this world. Our paycheck does not come from anything that a man or a bank could give us. Our pay is mostly waiting for us on the other side, as well as in the moment of now. And so I'd like to leave our listeners with some questions. Have you ever tasted a stew that doesn't have any salt? And how big is a grain of salt, after all, that goes into a stew that makes a difference? And then the last question is, what would happen if you became a little saltier in your workplace? So I'm pretty excited about this show, and I would like our listeners again to pray for Kelsey Jones. And Shelley, I want to thank you for your faithfulness. You have certainly stayed salty in all your work. And blessings to our listeners. Go out and make it a salty day.
Thank you so much, Lori Beth, and thank you, listeners, and we will be back next week with additional thoughts around Omega Leadership. Have a good evening.